You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Welcome to Overdrive on TSN 1050. I'm Gord Miller, sitting in for Brian Hayes, who is sort of on vacation. He called in Monday. You hear that? He called in Monday.
No, I did not.
He could not sit out the Kawhi thing. He could not. So he called in Monday. He's on Mitch Marner's standby, I think. If Marner does something, he'll be calling in. So Gord Miller with Steve Simmons.
Is there cap issues with Hayes?
Yes. There are cap issues with Hayes. Always. It's his cap gives him a hairhead.
Someone has to be moved so that he can come back the same way the Marner thing has to happen.
So we are with Steve Simmons, everyone's favorite, who I've known for a long time. We were talking about this off the air. You and I first met in the mid-80s when you were in Calgary and I was in Edmonton.
What year did you start covering the Oilers?
1983. So I start.
Would have been then, probably. Unless you did that. Did you do Eskimos before that?
No, I started at CBC. I was 17 years old. I told them I was 18, but I was 17 when I started. And so I started in April of 83. The Oilers went to the final in 83, and I was sent out to help cover it. So the late Peter Watts, who you knew well from Calgary, was our reporter in Edmonton. He was there, and he gave me a list of questions to ask the Islanders. And one of them was to Al Arbor, was, are the Islanders intimidated by the Oilers' speed and skill? I was asking this of a man whose team at that point had won 16 consecutive playoff series, or 15, whatever it was, and he blistered me. So I learned a lesson that never ask someone else's question. And also,
I never heard Al Arbor blister anyone.
And it was funny because Al and I actually got to know each other socially, and I was having dinner at his house in Florida years later, and his wife, Claire, who's lovely, he said, "Hey, Claire, see Gordo down there? He asked me the dumbest question I've ever been asked." So he carried that with him for a while.
He remembered.
He remembered. So that's when we met, and you were covering the Flames, and I was covering the Oilers. And I remember you back then writing somewhat controversial things because in Calgary, the Flames arrived there in 1980, right? And so it was still the bloom was still fresh, but the Oilers and Flames were a thing. And you would write some. I remember when the Oilers beat the Flames in the playoffs in 84, I want to say, you wrote some pretty harsh things about the Flames. And it didn't go over well with Flames management and some fans. But you showed up the next day, and I remember, you know, someone saying that's the mark of a good reporter, that you're going to say something unpopular, show up the next day. But you have made a career out of saying unpopular things.
And showing up the next day.
Right.
And saying popular things, which, by the way, nobody ever comes up to you and says, "Boy, I really liked that column."
But the
people will tell you they hate the ones, but very rarely will you get, "I liked it."
But the easiest thing to do in a market is to say how great their prospects are, how great their coach is, how great the man. That's an easy thing to do because that's what home fans want to hear. When you start asking questions and questioning star players and hometown heroes, it gets problematic. Has it ever bothered you? Does criticism ever bother you?
The criticism doesn't bother me. Sometimes what I've written will bother me a day later or 2 days later,
sure.
And you'll look back and say, maybe I should have said it this way instead of that way.
Okay.
And you get to those kind of things. But for the most part, I've taken a look at, you know, big picture, because that's the way I like to think about things.
Right.
But I take a look, and I try and be honest, number one.
Right.
And opinionated, which is what my job is, to express my opinion. And so I think I sometimes, because I'm emotional and I'm opinionated, I will say things that others won't go as far to say.
Right. Okay. So
we could be sitting in a bar, for example, 5-6 of us after a game, which often happens.
Yeah.
And everyone's expressing their opinions. But the only guy the next day who's pretty much writing them is me.
Right.
And Terry Jones did the same in Edmonton for years. There's been others. But for the most part, the guy who expresses his opinion becomes the bad guy over time.
Exactly. And I think the other thing that you are doing now is you are one of the last, and I'll say this, I spoke to your editor-in-chief the other day. I ran into her at Barbarian Steakhouse. And I was saying to her that you are one of the last columnists, like a general columnist in a city. Like, when I moved here, there was Milt Donnell, there was Trent Frayne in the Globe, there was yourself.
Jim Proudfoot.
They were guys that wrote the Blue Jays, and they wrote the Leafs, and they wrote the Argos, and they wrote the Queen's Plate, and they covered sports. Like the sports columnists that I grew up reading, you know, in all the, you know, I mean, if you want to think about Red Smith back in the day, and you know, take your pick of Jim Murray in the LA Times, all those guys were legends, right? And so you're one of the last guys doing that. So when you do that, are there times when you say, I shouldn't say this, but I will anyway?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because you build relationships with people. Our whole business is about relationship building.
Right.
And the more you get to know someone, the better your relationship can be.
Sure.
The more difficult it becomes to write honestly about them and what they're doing. And so maybe I'll use Pat Gillick as an example because sure. He's the best general manager I've ever been around. And nothing was harder to do than to write critically of Pat Gillick. And I wrote years ago, the Stan Pat name was mine, when he wouldn't make trades for a great period of time that eventually led to the big trade, which eventually led to the World Series wins. But because I had such a nice relationship with Pat, and because he was just a prince of a man, what would you want to write about him that was negative? What would you want to write about Paul Beeston that was negative? Cliff, is there a nicer man on the planet Earth than Cliff Fletcher?
No.
And I had a real hard time in Calgary.
Yeah.
Because he had moved from Atlanta where they had no coverage, and suddenly everyone's interested in everything they were doing, and he had to adjust. By the time he got to Toronto, he had it all figured out. But in Calgary, him and I had some real problems because I was going at it the only way I knew how to go about it, and he was going at it the way he knew how to go about it, and we didn't mesh.
Because he has a job to do, and you have a job to do. And Cliff's a great, Cliff's a great friend of mine. I've known him for a long time, but it is hard, and it's... It's funny because, you know, there'll be times when I will tweet something or say something and someone will say, you know, that was kind of harsh on me. Like, the one that surprises me is, so I sent a tweet out not long ago that the Chicago Blackhawks trading Henry Yokoharu yesterday, they drafted 10 players between 2007 and 2017. The only one left in the organization is Patrick Kane in 2007. That's not a shot at the Blackhawks.
Well, part of that is the fact they've been drafting in that 20 to 30
right.
range,
but
which is
it's just a statistical fact. It's just a numerical fact. It's not a
facts bother people.
It's not
people don't like facts.
Right. But here's an example for you. So last year I was on this show with Brian Hayes when the Leafs signed John Tavares, and I said that, you know, the first thing I do after a trade is made or a big signing is to call people around the league, and a number of them said, "How will the Leafs make this all fit with Matthews coming up, with Marner coming up?" With Nylander coming up, how will they make this all fit? They're going to have a real cap squeeze. And when I said that, it really angered people. Now, my Twitter mentions are normally blocked. I can only see the tweets back from people that I follow. I don't follow many people. But, you know, the show got a lot of feedback, and the producer of the show said, you know, we're getting slaughtered here. I didn't say it was a bad signing. Whether you did or not, it's a mathematical fact. The Leafs do have a cap.
Well, guess what? What are they doing right now? They're scrambling like heck to get their player signed because they have a cap problem.
I want to ask you about something specifically. And I don't want to, because I think you do a very good job and you do anger people, and that's part of your job. The Phil Kessel hot dog story.
Yes.
If you had it to do over again, would you write that?
Yes, because it's true.
Okay. And so you.
I made an error in the column on the address, and there's a whole series of events that led to that error. But to be honest, take the three. It's not a Phil Kessel hot dog story. It's three sentences of a 900 word piece on why the Leafs traded Phil Kessel, and because at that point, if I had written that he was downtown instead of writing the streets that I said it was, that story would never have come to anything, because nobody would have said there's no hot dog stand there. Therefore, he made it up. Which is what led to the whole screaming and yelling about the whole thing. But if you go and read that piece today, lop off the first three sentences and read the rest. It is the most complete read that anyone has written on what happened to Phil Kessel and the Leafs. And the irony of this whole thing to me is Brendan Shanahan went into the office the next day, the day the column appeared in the paper, and some of his people around him were laughing. And he looks over like, what are you laughing about? Did you read Simmons today? And he said, no. And the line that came to him next was, looks like you wrote it.
Well, you wrote about Kessel when he got dealt to Arizona, that he's like a house guest.
Well, you know what? You have house guests, they come to your house, you love them, right? They're wonderful. And then the one that you can't get rid of because he stays too long. And that was the analogy. And people just went wild again over the analogy.
So do you read your Twitter mentions?
I have stopped doing that for my own personal health, but I glance on occasion at them.
So the reason I don't is not that you've mentioned you're emotional. I'm rational. Steve Dryden, the executive, the editor-in-chief of Hockey Runner, calls me rational man. What I find aggravating is I'll say something on Twitter, I'll tweet something out, and then a guy like some about Montreal guy, well, typical, you're a Leaf guy, and then it'll turn into an argument between three guys, with me included, about whether the Leafs stink or the Habs stink, and I'm not interested. Now, I also think that I don't want to subject myself to angry Ernie in Thunder Bay, who's got nothing better to do teeing off me. But today we're going to do that.
Okay.
In the 6 o'clock hour, we're going to read mean tweets, a la Jimmy Kimmel. So are you ready for that?
I could spend the whole hour doing it. I think it would bore people, but I'd spend the whole hour doing it.
So it's hard, though, right?
Because you know what? My wife takes it badly. I don't know if yours does, or my wife does not take that kind of public assaulting very well.
I don't get... Now, I am, you can call it willfully ignorant. I'm assuming I'm, not unpopular. I think for the most part, the reaction I get...
I love Cuthbert's line. I'm not intentionally... Like dissing your team.
No, I don't like...
When you do play-by-play, there's always one side that thinks you're not giving them enough, right?
If both sides think you were biased against them, then you've probably done a good job.
Well, I have the same thing because Leaf fans think I'm anti-Leaf. People outside of this market, outside of Toronto, think I'm pro-Leaf.
Right.
That tells me I'm doing my job.
Now, an example would be... one of the things I got years ago on Twitter was, don't say shutout. There are people.
Oh, the old, yeah.
There are people in the 21st century who still believe that the announcer, who is 250 feet above the ice, saying the word shutout can cause the goaltender to lose one.
Don't mention the no hitter.
Don't mention
this is just nonsense.
Or say that so and so's never missed a game, that you jinxed them. In the 20, rational man, I find it incredible in the 21st century that people believe that can still happen, but they do. And honestly, so you used to get emails. If you were trending on Twitter. And one night I was doing a game in Montreal, and all of a sudden I got an email, you're trending on Twitter. And it was like, Gord Miller said shutout, I can't, And then I tried to explain that, and then as soon as I said it, Carey Price got scored on,
yeah.
which I find funny, but yeah. They didn't. But it is...
I got an email the other morning, and the email said, I just woke up, you're trending on Twitter. I wrote back to my friend, go back to sleep.
Go back to sleep. Is there a column you've ever written that you regret it? Like, what, is there one that stands out? Gee, I wish I hadn't written that.
I probably do, and off the top of my head...
You've written how many columns? I mean...
It's in the 9,000 range.
Yeah. I mean, I can say honestly, there are things I've said on the air. I mean, obviously what I do is, there's no script. There's things I wish I'd said differently. There's things I wish I'd done differently. And I think that it's difficult to do, but I do find, so in your case, you have to balance doing what you do the way you do it with having relationships.
Yeah, and add another element to that. And the element is the Sunday column I write, which I've been doing now for 30-some years and is the most read column in Canada, most read sports column in this country on a weekly basis. And if people haven't read it before, it's just a...
It's a potpourri of
thoughts and opinions and rumors and humor.
But don't interrupt. Sorry, it's a throwback to
Dick Young.
Dick Young.
Well, it started because Frank Orr at the time was doing a column for the Toronto Star called Either Or.
Yes.
And my boss really liked that column, and he said, I'd like you to come up with something to combat it. And I think that column lasted one more year, and here I am 30 years later, and I really wish I hadn't come up with anything to combat it because I love doing it. I love the fact that it's very well read, and I hate the fact that, boy, does it get me in a lot of trouble. And part of it is that they're all sort of single punch notes. If you can't say it in two sentences, you can't say it. And so Cito Gaston said to me one day, I hate your Sunday column. And I said, why? He says, because you start on it, but you don't ever give the other side or finish. So I'm always, there's a yeah, but element to it. And I think that's part of what's made it so popular and why people like it so much is that I'm covering all kinds of things in all different ways, and it's shot, shot, dot, onto the next thing and an opinion on this and a stat on that and a trade rumor from here and just a bunch of a potpourri, as you say, of things that people now Sunday morning. It's become a Sunday morning, get up with your breakfast, have your cup of coffee, and read the column.
And the newspaper business, as we know, is changing rapidly, as is ours.
Changing, dying. We can go to many different
I'm trying to be generous. You know, the Globe and Mail announced major cuts this week. And so I think that if you have a newspaper column that's a must-read, for example, I'll give Larry Brooks in New York credit.
Yep.
If I want to know, if I'm going to New York to do a Ranger game, then I'm looking through Larry Brooks' archive.
I read it every Sunday. I read that column every Sunday.
I read Larry every day, but yeah, try to it. And I mean, and there are fewer and fewer columns where you have to do that. Because one of the things that's happened that's changed your business. So when I was working in Edmonton, Jim Matheson, who has covered the Oilers, imagine this, since day one in the World Hockey Association, that's 1972. He's written game stories for nearly 40 years. But only half the games used to be on TV. So Jim would write a story that said, at 2:45 of the first period, Jim Poplinski took a cross-checking penalty on the power play. Wayne Gretzky passed the puck to Yari Curry, who scored his 14th of the year. It was a description of the game. But then when every game was on TV, that became somewhat redundant.
And also, there was no sports centers in those days. There was no highlight shows, and you couldn't look at your phone for things. There was all kinds of different things.
Then along come the highlight shows. Then along come the post-game clips. All of a sudden now, if you watch a Leaf game, you can watch the game, see the highlights, see Mike Babcock's post-game news conference, see the players' reactions, all within an hour of the game being over. Now you're asking writers to be analysts.
Well, which is columnists were always to be that. Now you're asking the reporters and the game story guys to be that. And I think the most important thing they can provide is context. What happened? How did it happen? Why did it happen? How can that be changed? How can you fix it? Go that way. And I think that's where our business has certainly changed.
You wrote last week that you thought Don Cherry, his contract had not been renewed. I want to get this correct. You wrote that his contract had not been renewed yet. And might not be. Is that what you said?
No, I said that that Rogers has been making significant cuts to people that we know and people who've been around this business a very long time, making a lot of money, and that Cherry is every year the question comes up. I'm paraphrasing what I wrote, by the way, right now. Cherry, you know, every year is sort of, is he back? Is he not back? And I suspect, and this came from obviously conversations I had with other people, that maybe he's in the mix of not being back.
I never said he wasn't coming back.
I never said he was.
You never said definitively he won't be back.
No, but what happened was is that Don, via Kathy Broderick, because Don doesn't do Twitter, Kathy Broderick does his Twitter account, and she sort of manages his career, so to speak, came out the next day with, I wish Steve had called me, and then the reaction was huge to, you know, Don being out, and, you know, of course, then it becomes a story unto itself, because people are responding having not read the piece.
Right, and that's
a whole Twitter thing by itself. So this goes on to, and this is where I find it fascinating, because I write my note, which really, if you look at it, doesn't say anything. It's just left there to you can decide what you feel. Is he coming back? Is he not coming back? I don't know. He got mad when he saw it, said, I am coming back. Dan Ralph from the Canadian Press and Sean Fitzgerald from The Athletic were either assigned to or wound up doing stories on Don saying he's back. You know what Rogers said about him being back? No comment.
Yeah.
Now, all Rogers had to do, yes, he's back, to put the story away. But they refused to comment. So at this point, I don't know what to think.
So you're not a guy that delights in angering people. You're not a
Don Cherry's a friend of mine.
Right.
No, one of the last people.
What I'm saying is, in a general sense, you're not like, I'm going to write something here that's going to really piss people off.
Well, I got to tell you something. Some days you sit there and when you finish, you think this one's really going to hammer people.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't. And then you write one 2 days later. You think, I don't think this is going to bother anyone. And people go crazy. So what you think in the moment that you're sitting there and writing, and how people are going to respond to it? I've given up sort of figuring out what is going to get them and what isn't.
Yeah.
And again, I have to be true to myself, which is, you know, I've been doing this. I'm coming up to 40 years in October, Gord.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends in the business are now taking their buyouts and retiring and walking away. And, you know, my good friend David Schultz is doing that. Now Mackey from the Globe and Mail.
And some guys that were really, you know, were titans in the business.
Yeah. And so I'm still especially after the Raptors win, I'm almost as enthusiastic about the job as I've been in years. Just got my blood going again.
He's not going anywhere, people.
So I'm not retiring. I'm not quitting. And I still love it. And, you know, I obviously have this penchant that I don't really understand that I annoy people. And but the one thing about the people I annoy, they read. And my job is not to make you happy or make you sad. It's to get you, as my old friend Terry Jones in Edmonton would say, it's to get you to the bottom. And if I can get you to the bottom, I won.
And Jonesy, Terry Jones in Edmonton, if you want to know what the Edmonton sports fan thinks or is worried about or is consumed by, read Terry Jones. I can honestly say there's very few columnists in the country who have their finger on the pulse of sports in that city like Terry Jones does in Edmonton.
There's only one. And there's only been one for the last, 40 years that I've worked in the country. And I grew up in Alberta. When I said growing up, that's my first job. I was at the Calgary Herald, and he was at the Edmonton Journal, and then the Edmonton Sun. I'm not going to say he was my hero, but he was the guy I watched the closest. Because I wanted to know, how was it that when we all went to the dressing room after the game, and then we all went back up to the press box to write, we all sat down and tried to come up with the best piece we could come up with. How come his was better every time? And
Terry Jones.
Yeah. I learned so much from working with him and around him and learning to interview from him. It was really interesting to me when Cam Cole and him were the two columnists in Edmonton, because one wrote literature and the other one hardcore sport. And it was really interesting to me to watch, because at the water cooler, they're not talking about literature.
No, but there's a place for it.
I'm not saying there's not. I have great admiration for people that can write.
I think the great tribute to a columnist is if you watch the game that he was at, and he wrote something the next day, and you thought, I didn't think of that. I hadn't looked at it that way. I hadn't thought of it that way.
I always say that to my young people in the business, or even friends of ours, when we talk about, take them to the game with you.
Right.
Assume they're not there.
Yeah.
And take them to the game, and take them in the dressing room, and make them. Tell me what his face looks like when he's been cut. Or tell me whatever it is. You can still do that. Not as easily because of deadlines and things like that, but you can still tell that story that no one else can tell. That's the beauty of newspaper that I think will be here as long as newspapers are here.
Good stuff. Okay, so still to come today, we're going to do the gritties. The ESPYs are tonight. So we're going to do our awards.
Are you an ESPYs guy, by the way?
I got to be honest, Norm Macdonald made me really uncomfortable that year. And I like stand-up comedy. I like edgy comedy. I was kind of like, woof. Like, he went to some places I wouldn't have gone. But for the most part, I would say this. I don't like awards. Because they're arbitrary and silly. Yeah. The only thing worse than an award is an award show. So we're gonna have some fun with awards. We're going to have some fun awards. Cabby's joining us from Vegas. He's at the ESPYs. Kelsey Braid, who's anchoring SportsCenter, is going to join us. Dave Naylor, our CFL insider, and at 6 o'clock, we're going to do mean tweets. So I'm going to open my mentions, and we've already printed out some of yours. So if you're going to come on
Can I read yours?
Sure. And I'll, by the way, if you really, I think it was Alyssa Milano, the actress, who said, if you're really feeling too good about yourself, just search yourself on the internet, and that'll cure that right away. So all that coming up, and... yeah, it should be a fun day. So that was a good conversation. Thank you for that. I've always wanted to talk to you about that because I think it's a.
I want to tell, if we still have time, I don't know what time, sorry, tell a Wayne Gretzky story, because I know you guys are pretty close and the history of all that. But how different the world was back when the Oilers were kings.
Mm-hmm.
Covering the Flames, we are, quote, the enemy. But not in Gretzky's mind, but in Glenn Sather's mind and other people's minds. And I run into Wayne on the day before the day of the game morning skate, and typical, not like today, you can actually have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
And I said, I was looking for you yesterday and I couldn't find you. And he turned to me and said, well, next time you need me, here's my number. Click, click, click. And I wrote down his phone number, and I had Wayne Gretzky's phone number.
Yeah.
You know how many times that's happened since then?
I'm going to say zero.
One is the answer. and it's amusing, sort of the analogy. I'm at a junior hockey game. I go before the game to interview a player. And at the end of the game, I'm standing in the hallway, and the player walks out and he sees me there. He said, did you get everything you need? I said, yeah. He said, well, if you need any more, here's my number. Player, Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Two Edmonton guys, 35 years apart?
From Ontario.
Both from Ontario.
From Ontario.
But the only people, superstars, that ever offered me their phone numbers.
Well, the funny thing now is that everyone asks for your number because they want to text. No one ever phones. I have people, there are people whose phone numbers I have that I've never called.
Yeah, I have the same way, though. Our whole business now text. Is not about, if I can find out in one text what it took me 20 minutes on the phone to get, why wouldn't you text?
So that's all coming up. We're off to a great start, I think. We'll find out when we open our Twitter mentions what people think. That's all coming up. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the TSN app and watching on TSN 4. Back at Overdrive, 4:30 here in Toronto. Now, I'm going to admit something embarrassing here. I've been doing radio for about 3 years. Mulls has been doing, has been engineering it most of the time. I don't know his real name. Like, I know his last name is Mullen, and everyone calls him Mulls. I have no idea what Mull's first name is.
But aren't there a lot of people in your industry or our industry like that? You see them every single day. You work with them all the time. And then it hits you somewhere when you meet them, like at a restaurant or something, and you can introduce them to your friends. This is...
Yeah, this is Spike.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't know your name.
This is Shifty. This is Spike. Mull's, what is your first name?
Mark.
Mark Mullen?
That's right.
There you go.
So any relation, like the mystery.
Any relation to Joey?
Love Joey Mullen.
Yes.
Joey Mullen was just a hockey player. That's all he did. Just scored goals. And Cliff Fletcher always tells the story about trading him out of Calgary because he thought he was done. He scored 250 more goals.
Speaking of just a hockey player, did you see Pittsburgh today, Matt Cullen?
Yeah. Nice to see you. What a career. Like, honestly, and I said this on Twitter today, I don't remember him ever having a bad day at the rink. I probably did 100 games that Matt Cullen played. He never had a bad day.
Matt Cullen was a pro's pro.
Yeah.
I think that's the best thing you could say about a guy. You know, we talk at the end of so many careers, is he Hall of Fame, is he this? It doesn't matter. When you played the 20-some years that he played and you helped every team you ever played for and you set an example for everybody you were around, I have all the regard in the world for a guy and wish him the best in his retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? And he'll be in the game. He'll do something in the game afterwards. Absolutely. We're going to talk to Cabby from Vegas in a minute. And Cabby's first name is Cabral. Did you know that?
Yes.
So basically, I'm just going to sit here all day and you're just say, yes, you know everything.
Well,
okay, fine.
No, but Cabby and I are old friends. So,
Cabby is on the phone with us from Vegas. Cabby, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you? Actually, just quick correction. I'm in Los Angeles.
Sorry, it says
I move around a lot,
okay.
Gordy.
Fire the producer.
I'm all over the place.
It says on the sheet from Vegas, and of course, fire the producer. Keith, you're out.
No, it's Mark, all good. I move around quickly, my friend.
Mulls, you're in the producer's chair. From Los Angeles.
I'm friends with Elon Musk, so I took a tunnel.
So tell us, what are you looking for? Now, Tracy Morgan is hosting the ESPYs tonight.
That should be good.
Which is great, right? I mean, because of course he had the accident a couple of years ago and was life-threatening and everything else. What are you looking forward to the most tonight?
How many times he gets the audience pregnant in his opening monologue, and then how many times we get a Kawhi Leonard laugh reference. And I know he's not supposed to be here tonight at the ESPY Awards, which I'm covering on TSN, but I'm looking forward to those references and any other kind of Toronto, Drake, Raptors reference. I'm curious to see how they're going to handle that.
Now, he's nominated for Best Play, the buzzer beater in Game 7. Is nominated against the Dolphins' miracle against the Patriots, Derrick Henry's 99-yard run against the Jaguars, and Caitlin Ohashi scoring a perfect 10 in gymnastics.
Yes. Tough competition. But that, I mean, maybe it's because I'm Canadian and I'm from Toronto. I mean, it's like the second greatest shot in the history of the sport. I think the Ray Allen shot in Game 6 in the 2013 NBA Finals is a bigger shot because in the finals, but that Kawhi shot with the drama, the four bounces, I mean, over Embiid, who's 7'2". I mean, I don't know how you can beat that. I don't know how you can top that.
The photos that were taken of that shot from Stan Beehall of the Sun, from the guy at the Star, from Frank Gunn, Canadian Press, they were sensational. These are among the best sports photos I've ever seen. I'm with you, Cabby, on this. I think that the drama of bounce, 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 touch the rim and in, to me.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'd love to see him win and then, you know, not there to accept the award, you know, someone else accepting on behalf of him.
But that almost kind of goes with the mythology of Kawhi Leonard, right? Because he's so mysterious. Like, we just don't know. We still don't know that much about him. Like, if Uncle Dennis came out to accept the award, they'd be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Because Kawhi lets his actions speak louder than his words. And his actions were tremendous for us, obviously, in Toronto and the Raptors in that entire championship run. Also, I got to shout out Keyshawn Mystery and Rick Matonic for two other photos of that moment that Kawhi Leonard has written indelibly into history.
Where were you when you heard Kawhi had left, and what was your reaction?
Oh, man, dude, I was up for the Woj bomb. Gord, it was Friday night, 1:54 a.m. I'm just starting, like, I'm watching Killer Ratings on Netflix. Like, Stranger Things 3 hadn't dropped yet. And then when I saw the Woj bomb, I'm like, oh my. So I knew I was going to be up for another 2 hours, 2.5 hours, reading other reactions on NBA Twitter, seeing the memes on Instagram. And I was. I don't think I went to bed till 5 in the morning that night. And I was like, I was surprised because the Clippers just kind of came out of nowhere. But then the Paul George news?
Wait.
I was like, what?
Came out of nowhere?
Well, him going to the Clippers?
No.
Absolutely.
Well,
guys,
I've been saying that from the day he signed here. The day he was traded here. The Paul George thing came out of nowhere.
But I suppose in totality, both those things together. But, I mean, the Clippers hadn't really been on the radar for the last, like, 3 weeks.
They were at almost every game he played this year. They were following him around, like...
But to Cabby's point, the week of, it sounded like the Clippers were out, and it was down to the Lakers.
Well...
According to the Lakers.
Here's the way I view basketball. Probably similar to Cabby, but the way I view basketball is if Adrian Wojnarowski doesn't say it, it's not true.
You're right, yes.
So
wow, that's amazing.
Everything he says is true, and the rest I take with doubt. And so he never said the Lakers, and he never said anything until it happened, and then he points, it happened 10 minutes later, Paul George is traded, and my whole family is awake, and we're all... up all night.
Right? Wasn't it so crazy that, you know, there's like that code of silence that the Raptors had, that Masai Ujiri has, that Kawhi Leonard. You never hear any leaks out of Toronto. Like, I think the only leak we ever got was, I think, the first time Kyle was going to be traded to the Knicks. I think, Steve, you wrote about that, right? Way back in, was it 13 or 14? I feel like that's the only time there was maybe any whispers of movement. And then, like, this one, boom, out of, you know, seemingly thin air, that, like, the Clippers and then the Paul George thing. It was a fun night to be on Twitter, but I didn't see that particular thing coming.
So, Cabby, how do you think the Raptors should honor Kawhi? Should there be a statue outside Scotiabank Arena?
100%. I know it's an unpopular opinion. And I think for sure they should retire his jersey at some point in the future, not next season, but, you know, down the line with some hindsight and seeing how the team does after he leaves. Like, if the Raptors don't have success again, then, you know, this one singular moment is even more impressive. And again, this is another unpopular opinion, but there are statues on Legends Row with some Toronto Maple Leafs Hall of Famers who have never even made the Stanley Cup final, but they're honored because of their body of work. But as a singular moment for this franchise and for the city and the country at large, you should be honored with a statue and a jersey. And I know this is not a popular take. It's just my own.
I'm not so sure.
What do you guys think? Have you guys already spoken about it?
I'm not so sure it's popular or unpopular. I think the timing is really going to be important because we've had all these years of the Raptors and never anything close to a sniff of getting close to winning anything. And then all of a sudden this guy comes here and he basically takes these guys and lifts them on his shoulders and carries them to a championship. And that will never be forgotten. And we don't know when the next major championship is going to come here. So I think if he's got 10 more years in the NBA, then there's nothing wrong with, in my mind, 10 years from now, retiring his jersey here. And if you want to do a statue, that's true. But that championship might be the only Raptor championship we see in our lives.
And you know what, Cabby? Like, if you look down the street at Rogers Center and think of, you know, the Joe Carter home run, the Robbie Alomar home run against the A's, two of the greatest moments in franchise history. What's the statue out there? Ted Rogers.
Well, I don't have a problem with that, frankly.
How could there not be a statue of Joe Carter?
I have no problem with Ted Rogers being because there may not be baseball today in Toronto if Ted Rogers hadn't chosen to
put
buy
one up
them.
After you put the Joe, there has to be a statue of Joe Carter.
Joe's on the wall in the stadium with the other people, but I wouldn't put him ahead of what Alomar did against Oakland. I wouldn't put him ahead of what Ed Sprague did against Atlanta. There is no Joe Carter home run if those other ones are hit.
So
I agree with Gord. Actually, there should be Alomar against Dennis Eckersley, who was one of the most fearsome closers of his day in the ALCS, and just pimped it to right center field. That was massive. And then for those two, they should be in close proximity or back to back or something. Well, they did win back to back, so thematically it makes sense too, even though they're in different years. But I agree with Gord. Those two statues need to be outside of SkyDome.
I think there should be a Kawhi statue. I don't think they should retire his number. I think they should not give it out for a long time. I think retiring his number would be excessive for a guy that was here for 1 year. I'd like to see them. Hopefully he plays here next year. I hope he doesn't load manage the Raptor game in Toronto. But and give him a big honor. But before we let you go, Cabby, I want to ask you this. One of the highlights of the ESPYs every year is the presentation of the Jimmy V Award for Perseverance, named in honor of Jim Valvano, whose speech, of course, accepting it was legendary, or accepting his honor of the ESPYs was legendary. We think of Craig Sager. What a speech he gave a few years ago at the ESPYs. This year they're honoring Rob Mendez, a high school football coach who was born without arms or legs. He's been the head coach of a high school team in Saratoga, California. That to me is the epitome of the ESPYs, that moment. Never mind best athlete, best this, best that, but when they allow someone who's inspiring to get up and speak.
Yeah, those are great moments, and it's really every time that award is presented, it's an immediate standing ovation. You can feel there are tingles in the audience, and it's I think of Stuart Scott as another dude, yeah. Or another gentleman who was honored in that way. And I think that's the reason why the show has moved from ESPN to ABC, A, for a broader audience, but B, just to tell those stories to a bigger audience so that it can resonate throughout sports. Because, some people's journeys, they're bigger than sports. And Rob Mendez's story should transcend his coaching at that high school. And he's on the cover. It's on my kitchen, my coffee table, but he's on the cover of this month's ESPN, the magazine, the physical issue. I'm one of the last few people that actually order ESPN the magazine, that physical issue, and I left it at home. But I'm looking forward to seeing how, the video tribute and then hearing some words from him tonight. Should be awesome.
You better get that magazine quick because there aren't many of them left.
Oh.
Last year, they had the victims of the Michigan State doctor and the investigation of who all came public with that very moving and very troubling account at in the United States. And when you saw one after the other get up there, we're just sitting in our house and tears are running down
Jim Kelly,
our eyes.
And Jim Kelly won the Jimmy V Award last year, and his speech was incredible.
Yes.
So Cabby,
it's an incredible moment. It really is.
I would tell you to have fun in Los Angeles, but who's kidding? Who? Cabby's in L.A.
Have fun. That's a superfluous thing with the Cabmeister.
I will try my best to come home with a voice and a few stories for you guys off the air.
Cabby, thanks for talking to us. Enjoy yourself tonight, and we'll see what's left of you when you get back.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Many years ago, I got invited to a trip to Israel. And Cabby and his producer were part of our sports trip to Israel. And one of my favorite things, we are meeting at every night at dinner or lunch. We just didn't eat. We had meetings with important people throughout the country. And so this was a really important one. We were with the assistant to the president or prime minister of Israel, who was coming in and talking to us about their security and all the things they do. And we're having this fascinating conversation at dinner. There's a really good-looking group of women in the bar. And poor Cabby, he just wasn't really interested in the security.
The Prime Minister of Israel.
He wasn't really interested in where their army is going to be stationed tonight. There was a couple of nice lookers. And he's, excuse me, I have to go to the washroom.
I won't be back.
Yes.
I will not be back. Good for him. Still more to come. We'll have Kelsey Braid, who's anchoring Sports Center tonight, coming up. We're presenting the Gritties at 5:30. among the categories: best hair in Toronto sports, best sports moment of the year, best overdrive soundbite of the year. All of that, plus mean tweets still to come. And Dave Naylor, our TSN football insider, will join us as well. You're listening to TSN Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the app and watching on TSN 4. Back on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the worst throw ever to commercial, that last one I did. So I'll wear that one. Also, our producer, Keith, does not like to be called Keith. He wants to be known as the grappler.
The things you learn between four and seven.
He was grappling with the fact that the ESPYs are in Los Angeles, not in Las Vegas. So you're going to New York this weekend with the Blue Jays.
Yes.
Has anyone noticed that there are basically no pennant races in baseball?
There are wild card races.
But there's one pennant race of note. The Cubs and the Brewers are a half a game apart. The Cubs lead the Brewers by half a game. Here are the pennant races in the American League so far. Yankees 6.5 up on Tampa. The Twins 5.5 up on Cleveland. Houston 7.5 up on Oakland. In the National League, the Braves lead the Nationals by 6. The Dodgers lead Arizona by 13.5 games. So really, now you mentioned the wild card race. Fair enough.
The wild card is kind of like, we got to thank Bud Selig for bringing in the first wild card and then the second one, because otherwise it'd be no races at all.
So yeah, Tampa, Cleveland, Oakland, all close in the American League. In the National League, it's Washington, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Arizona, San Diego, St. Louis, all two games apart. It's artificial, but it is a race. I mean, how about Bud Selig's book talking about why he wasn't there when Barry Bonds broke the record, that Bonds wasn't that likable? Hey, Bud, neither were you.
I think that was his way of saying, without saying it, that I knew how he got the record.
Right.
I didn't agree with how he got the record, therefore I'm not going to
You know what bugs me about that is, great that you take the moral high ground on that. You knew.
Of course he knew.
So you profited from it. So don't tut-tut that these guys were using performance-enhancing drugs and saying they were embarrassment. You knew they were doing it, and you were profiting from it. Like, it's a little bit, and I'll be honest, like the Moneyball thing in Oakland, you know, they never talk about Zito, Mulder, and Hudson winning 20 games each.
In the book they do, but in the movie they ignore that fact.
Miguel Tejada was the MVP. He was on the George Mitchell Report as one of the steroid users. Oakland had more players busted for steroids than anyone. Balco was in their backyard. Billy Bean either didn't notice that guys' heads were getting twice as big or didn't care.
Well, the one picture of Bonds that gets me is you look at Barry Bonds' Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You look at Barry Bonds' 73 home run season. Like, I know a lot of people have put weight on over the years, or put mass on over the years, or put muscle on over the years. I've never seen I've never seen a head go from normal-sized to giant-sized for an adult.
You know what? Bonds gets it, and deservedly so, but he gets it worse than most because he was a jerk.
Yeah. Unfortunately, so was Clemens, though.
Oh, Roger Clemens was terrible.
When Dan Plesac played for the Blue Jays, Dan Plesac, relief pitcher, and before that, a starting pitcher, when he played for the Blue Jays, he had racehorses, or standardbred racehorses, and he was big into that. And he named one of his horses Rule 21, which was Roger Clemens' number with the Blue Jays, and the fact that he had his own set of rules and everybody else had had team rules.
Hey, listen, you and I could talk for hours about being treated like garbage by baseball players. I mean, Reggie Jackson, I'll tell you the quick story here. I'm working in Edmonton. The Angels minor league team was there, the AAA team. They're going to play them in an exhibition game. So they flew me down to spring training in Arizona to interview Reggie Jackson to promote this game. Reggie takes like three rounds in the batting cage, shags some flies, does like eight sit-ups. He's about 20 yards from a fence where there's fans, and this kid goes, "Hey, Reggie, can I get your autograph?" And he wheels around and says, "It's Mr. Jackson, and I'm working here. You think I'm sitting here?" It was awful. And he gets up and says, "Where are you from?" I said, "Edmonton." That, and he kept walking. And the PR guys, "I'll bring him back." And I was like, "Oh, please don't. I'm terrified of him. Please don't." I will say this. When I heard years later that his house burned down with a garage full of uninsured classic cars, I was happy.
Not that you're going to carry that in any way, but I understand the sentiment. I was sent once to Arizona to interview George Bell after he had left the Blue Jays. And George Bell was a colorful figure of sorts, mm-hmm. and would say things, and some days be a wonderful guy to talk to, and some days be the most miserable man on earth. So I go out there, and I set up with the PR guy to meet George Bell at a certain time, and I show up, no George Bell. Come back the next day, set up with the PR man to be here a certain time, no George Bell. So after 2 days in a row of this, I said, you know, my paper sent me here just to get George Beall. I have to get George Beall. And so that day, he says, show up at 9 a.m., which is pretty early for that kind of thing. So I show up and asked George Beall one question, turned on the tape machine. 45 minutes later, he stopped talking.
We got to go. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN app.